Ladies and gentlemen, we're here today to celebrate two remarkable women. Firstly, Detective Inspector Vera Stanhope, one of the most unusual and memorable of all contemporary fictional detectives, and her even more remarkable creator, Anne Cleves.
Wow.
And Anne has written 24 novels, including the Gold Dagger-winning Raven Black, which is the first volume in her Shetland Quartet. But it's her series about Vera Stanhope that has been receiving most attention recently. As for the past 3 weeks, ITV1 has been broadcasting a series adapted from the novels, starring one of Britain's finest actresses, the 2-time Oscar-nominated Brenda Bleffin, as Vera. And we're also delighted to welcome Paul Ruttman, who has adapted 2 of Anne's novels for the series. And those of you who will be suffering from Crime Fest withdrawal symptoms on Sunday night are advised to tune in at 8 o'clock for the final episode of the series. And for the first time, that will be an original story written by Paul. And if you've missed any of it, the series will be available on DVD from Monday. Anne's 4th Vera novel, Silent Voices, has just been published in hardback. So perhaps, Anne, you'd start by describing Vera to us for anyone who hasn't come across her yet.
I suppose when I started writing Vera, I was looking for an antidote to most then, because it was written in 1999, the first Vera book, most female protagonists then were fit and good looking and they could run. You know, even the feminists like Sarah Paretsky, her central character might not be drop dead gorgeous, but she could always get a man and she'd be up all night doing dangerous things, but then at 5 in the morning she'd be jogging around the lake and you just know that isn't how it is for most women. So I suppose I was looking for a character that was different from that. And so Vera is overweight and she doesn't have terribly good skin. And she's single, she's a spinster. I suppose an old fashioned sort of spinster. And when I grew up, when I was a child, there were quite a lot of those because it was just after the war and lots of women had lost their men. So those strong, formidable women ran the Sunday schools and were teachers and were hospital matrons. And I suppose there's a bit of that in her too, a strong, responsible woman.
She's not a Bridget Jones spinster, is she?
She's not. I'm not convinced that she's ever had sex, but Paul, I know, has other plans for her, but I'm not absolutely sure.
I won't pursue that a bit further.
Val McDermott is convinced she's gay, but I'm not sure about that either.
Do you know? I mean, do you know everything about Vera?
No, because I'm sharing her now with other people, aren't I? So my Vera belongs to me, but as soon as you publish a book, your character also belongs to the readers who read them, because they bring their own imagination and their own history and their own experience to the reading process. And I still think that reading is far more creative than writing, because you're the people that take the words and turn them into stories and pictures. So now it's just an extension of that process, really. First giving it to Paul and then reading his scripts, and then we both have to trust the directors that we're given and the actors that we're given. And sometimes that's a good process and sometimes it's not, but we have no say in that.
Is there anything you know about Vera that you haven't shared with your readers? Anything tucked away in the back of your mind?
I've done a couple of short stories recently which do go into her back history a bit. So
they're more revelatory about her than the novels, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess so. So one that's going to be in the second CWA anthology, published by Seven House, and another in a Murder Squad collection. You know, I'm in a group of writers called the Murder Squad, and we've put together a collection of short stories. So for news, exciting news about Vera, read the short stories.
Okay. And at any point when you were writing the first 3 books, did you think, I'd like to see this character on TV, or did you contemplate that happening?
I never contemplated it. You have to realise that before Raven Black, really, I was one of the bottom of what they call a mid-list, you know, that wonderful euphemism in publishing, like, you know, right at the bottom of the heap. For ages, I didn't even have books out in paperback. You know, it's been a struggle. So it would have been just the height of madness to have considered that anybody would want to turn them into a television series. So no, that absolutely never crossed my mind.
Because it was very sudden, wasn't it, when Raven Black won the Gold Dagger in 2006?
Yeah, that's right. Suddenly for the first time, you know, people were quite interested, and I started getting overseas contracts, and I could give up work. I'd been writing for 20 years and then suddenly could give up work, which was amazing.
Okay, and Paul, perhaps you could tell us just a little bit about your background and how you came to be involved with the series.
Well, I suppose my I've been working in drama and television for 15 years. My first job was actually on a Channel 5 soap opera called Family Affairs. I was a storyliner. I don't know if anyone caught that show. when I started working on it, there, you know, the ratings. Ratings are extrapolated from 5,000 viewers around Britain. This was Channel 4's very early days. And it actually had what they called negligible, which means nobody out of the 5,000 viewers was watching Family Affairs. So they couldn't, you know, they didn't want to say zero, but I don't know who was watching.
That's equivalent to being a mid-list author, isn't it?
It really was, it really was. And then at some point after I left that show, a new producer came on, and there was a gas explosion and everybody died, all the characters, and I think they started again. Moving on from that, I then worked as a producer, largely for the BBC, for a few years. Some crime, always wanted to write, but was rather slow in gathering the courage to try, and got an agent and started writing full time about 5 years ago, on existing series on the whole, plus some development, and having written a bit of crime on shows like Inspector Lewis, I was lucky enough to be approached to read Hidden Depths, which had been picked up by ITV Studios at that stage, and they were looking for someone to adapt it. So that was my introduction to the novels.
Okay, and you've written episodes of Lewis and Marple.
That's right. Yes.
So
yes.
Are you a crime fan? Have you always?
I am actually. Yes, I am a crime fan. I've always loved crime, both on screen and novels. So yes, I read a lot of American fiction in my teens and twenties. American crime fiction, and so. Slightly different from this, but yeah, it's definitely in my blood, I would say.
Okay. So we'll go back to the beginning a bit, Anne, and talk about when you first created Vera, which was in about
1999. Yeah.
And I don't think when you started writing that book that you knew she was going to be in it.
It was the time when Minette Walters was doing very well, and my editor and my agent said, what you really need to be writing is big blockbuster psychological novels, because they're what sells. We don't need series anymore. We're not wanting to do series anymore. What we need is these big novels. So I'd had a thought about putting three women in a cottage right up in the Northumberland National Park to do an environmental impact assessment survey. So before there's any major development, like a quarry in the book or anything really, that scientists have to go in and see what's there in terms of the birds and the plants and the mammals. And that idea of there being almost like detectives, and they call it ground truthing, which I think is a lovely term, and again is quite telling for a psychological novel. So it was really going to be about these three women, and it was going to be told from each of their perspectives. But then by heart and soul, I think I am a traditional detective story lover, and I grew up with Sayers and Allingham, and it just didn't feel right not to have a detective. So I remember absolutely that there's a funeral scene, and Vera sort of blows in like a bag lady and sits at the back, and that was when she first arrived, and so I just carried on writing about it because I don't plot in advance. And
so she just popped into your head?
Yeah, I just felt that it needed a detective to be there. And I love the fact that in the television adaptation, there is that church right up in the hills, lovely shots with the Northumberland landscape round it, and there's Vera at the back, although the story is quite different. But they kept that scene, which was my first introduction with Vera too.
She doesn't really have any antecedents in that fiction, or not?
Oh, I don't know. I hadn't really thought about that. But, I mean, there are... I think that the closest person to Vera is Reg Hill's DL. Mm. You know, large, jolly, on the surface, slightly more sensitive underneath than they let on, and they sort of scratch bits of themselves, and that sort of fits in for both of them.
It would be good if they could combine a Dio and Pasco and Vera TV series.
No, I don't think Vera needs the competition, thank you very much, Jake.
And had you read any of Anne's books, Paul, before you?
No. I have since.
Is anything you particularly admire?
I think the thing that immediately struck me when I started reading in depth was, I think yes, it's a puzzle, yes, it's a great riddle, but the humanity with which she gives us the characters. Not just Vera. I think Vera is a wonderfully rounded, in every way, character in the books, and I love. I mean, the book I read, Hidden Depths, I think there's an early chapter of her poking around in the fridge, getting pheasant casserole out and, you know, dreaming about. In fact, I think it was a past love affair. But, you know, maybe she's a virgin. but she came wonderfully to life. But I loved all the characters. I think the guest characters, as we call them in television, I think are wonderful. And obviously this instinct for landscape, which I think seems to underscore all your work. In fact, you know, there is a very keen sense of landscape, which... obviously lends itself very well to the screen.
Mm. So you're thinking when you're reading the book about ways to bring the landscape to life, where you can go?
I think yes. I think actually particularly with Hidden Depths and Crow Trap, I think Hidden Depths has a lot of coastal material. There's rivers, there's watery graves, and just that coastal strip. Was felt like such a kind of coherent landscape for that story, in the same way that that kind of wild, more inland landscape worked for Crow Trap. In fact, my first my first encounter with Anne, I went up with the producer for a few days in Tyneside and met Anne and her husband Tim, and you drove us around for about 3 days. And so we did a lot of all of that. Elaine, the producer, had travel sickness. So after about half an hour, we had to drop her. I can't remember what it was. Annick?
We dropped her at Alma Station.
Alma
yes,
Station.
Partly it was my husband's fault because...
Yes, perhaps.
I had this meeting with Elaine, who is like my fairy godmother, because this is a story that maybe you've all heard, but it's a lovely story all the same, that... she found the book because she went into her local Oxfam shop in Crouch End and found The Crow Trap in an Oxfam shop, and that's how the series came to be bought and to be made. So Elaine's been my fairy godmother really since then. And we had this meeting with Elaine and with Julia, who's head of development at ITV Studios, and Kate Bartlett, the head of ITV Studios, in this very flash office on the South Bank. And I was there pinching myself, you know, thinking, is this really happening to me? I don't think so. And they were talking about who might play Vera and how we were going to develop it. And I was quite nervous, but I was very positive that I want it filmed in Northumberland, because that was really important to me. And I said, very, very diffident, do you think it would be all right if I brought the scriptwriter up and let him have a look at my patch before he starts writing? And luckily they said yes. But Tim and I were very, because we had this clapped out car, and I didn't want to appear to be, you know, some sort of failure. So we hired this great 4x4.
Just slightly wider than the road, wasn't it? Yeah.
To go and pick up Paul and Elaine, thinking that at least they'd be high enough to see over hedges, besides the fact that we really, really wanted to impress them and didn't want them to think that I was some sort of no-mark writer. And they'd made this dreadful mistake in picking up the books. But Tim wasn't used to the car, so he was driving it and kept stalling it and it kept jerking.
Yes.
So poor Elaine, who does get travel sick, we had to put her out at our
yes. But I think by that stage she decided it was safe to leave us on our own. You know,
we were getting on all right.
Yeah, we were getting on fine.
Yeah.
But interestingly, in those few days, so many of the things that we did, the places we saw, found their way into the show.
North Blythe.
Yeah, North Blythe, and just that kind of post-industrial landscape, very beautiful coastline there, but also the kind of the left behinds of heavy industry. So it's that mixture which got into the film.
Yeah, because it's a beautiful looking series, but you do in your books concentrate on the urban areas as well as the.
Yeah, and that's a great thing about setting it in Northumberland, because you have the wonderful sweep of the coastline with the beautiful. and empty, and the hills and the moorland where the Crow Trap was filmed, but also there's a lot of post-industrial. So we actually use as a production office the old Swan Hunter shipyard buildings on the Tyne at Wall's End. And I just feel very proud when I see these buildings. I can remember, I've not lived in Tyneside that long, but I can remember when at close of play at 5 o'clock, thousands and thousands of men streaming out of those offices because they've been building ships there. And it looked so desolate and so derelict for so long, but now it's almost brought back to life, at least while ITV are in, and employing lots of local people, and the drivers and the security guys and the location managers are all local workers. And I do feel really chuffed about that, because we're making things. It might not be that we're making ships, but we are making things on the Tyne again.
But you've got that sense of a desolate area in the first series.
Yeah.
Mm. In the second series, maybe now people are working.
Yeah, I don't think we'll make that much difference.
So, Paul, can you tell us a bit more about how you approach adapting a novel? How many times you read it? And do you have to make lists of characters?
I do, actually. I have quite a bad memory, so I scribble down a lot while I'm... I always have this idea that the best way to do it is that you read it once without a pencil, you know, and just absorb it. That never quite happens, but I try to read it once and just absorb it in quite an impressionistic way, if that's the right word. And then I read it second time, making a lot of notes as I go along, including character names and you know, one of the challenges is to boil down a novel into 90 minutes of screen time, and that's always difficult. Our characters often have to be combined or lost, but after the second reading, I tend to put the book away. Just start trying to plot the story almost as if for the first time, and then come back to the book afterwards. And sometimes what can be nice is you think you're actually going away from the novel, and you think you're strolling off on some plot line that really is perhaps a little bit far away from the book, and then actually you turn around and realise it, and hopefully in another way, it actually does chime with the themes of the book and so on. So which happened a few times, actually. So that's roughly the process, yeah.
Okay. And you were pleased with the scripts?
Yes, I was. I was very nervous, you can imagine. Well, I can't say no. it was tricky handing it over, and although I was very, you know, very happy to take the money, that was nice. And it's a big deal to hand your baby over to somebody else. And they wouldn't show me the first drafts of the script, so I kept getting this note back from Elaine saying, "No, draft ones. I've just sent him a few notes, and he's got these queries. What do you think about this and this and this?" And then, we've done draft two, and then finally draft three was done, and I got sent the script. And just a couple of scenes in, I thought, "Yeah, this is okay. You know, his Vera is my Vera." And then, you know, there were a couple of things, and I would write to him, write to Paul, just as one writer to another. So with respect, writing, not feeling that I had any proprietorial rights really over this work, but just sort of comments and just little things that maybe didn't feel right because a Geordie wouldn't say that or something. And we had a bit of communication on that. But it can't be a faithful representation of the book, because then it would be very bad television, and that would be no good for me. It's much better that it's its own thing and good in its own right and captures the essence of the book. I think that's what that's the best you can hope for, really.
I once read a novel by Simon Brett. There was a crime novelist who was hanging around the set of a TV series based on his books, complaining about every change, and eventually someone killed him. And you weren't like that. I mean, were you consulted once the production was up and running?
They were incredibly gracious, yes, and I did go, and I was invited on set, and I could probably have gone more often, but it is incredibly tedious. So they show the set, you know, they shoot the same scene from so many angles, and after you've heard the same bit of dialogue five times, you just want to lose. And it's very cold. If they're filming outside, it's freezing, because this is the northeast coast, and it's very cold. So I would tend to drop in about lunchtime.
Yeah, lunches are good.
The catering's good.
They had a hot buffet and a hot a la carte. So if you had timed it right, you could actually get two meals.
And are you on set a lot?
I tend to try and come up like for a day or two for each film.
But you're not there doing emergency rewrites?
No, that it's not good for anyone's health.
And so a lot of the books, a lot of their appeal is to do with the inner monologues. And Vera is often looking at people and thinking, I suppose they pity me because I'm fat or because I don't have children.
Mm.
And in the films, the scenes can be very similar to the books, but then you've just got Vera looking instead of thinking, and you have to work out what she's thinking from her face. I mean, did you try and preserve as much of the inner monologues?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think it's something that people often say about the difference between screen and the novel, quite rightly, obviously, is that you know, you have the privilege of access to the inner voice of the characters in fiction. I was a very bad actor as a teenager, but what has I have preserved from that is a love of acting and a love of actors, I think, and what they do. And I think that what you do get from actors is someone like Brenda and also David Leon, who plays Joe. You know, you may not have the text of the inner monologue, but you can see you have subtext. You can see them saying one thing and feeling something else. You can have a very textured performance, which I think gives you in a more suggestive way, I hope, a real insight into what's going on in the lives of the characters. So I think that's something that the screen brings, and actually it's the way that a lot of novelists write, isn't it? In the more kind of Hemingway mould, you know.
You have to have a lot of faith in your actors.
I think you do, you know. I mean, it's interesting, this thing about adaptation. In a way, I think every script is adapted. A director comes along, actors come along, and it changes again. I mean, you know, some of the, you know, what's lovely for Anne and me sometimes is the conversations that we've had to see that survive onto the screen and to see that arrow go all the way through. And then there are the moments when it gets broken up a little bit, or, you know, when
we get cross and mutter to ourselves.
We do a bit, yeah. St. Mary's bloody lighthouse, where is it?
That's right. Each of the Veras that have happened so far has a different director, and you can see, I think, and the first director did lose the plot literally on occasions, we thought.
Yep.
So we are the writer's gang, and we mutter about the director. About the director sometimes.
So you were disappointed with the first film?
Yeah, I think it lost a lot because it moved away from Paul's script, which I thought was fine and strong enough, and I really hated the melodramatic scene in the castle that was more like Enid Blyton than anything that should be written for adults, and the way that every conversation was done at a trot, so they never actually sat still to have a conversation. They were always running or walking down corridors or across a beach or down a pavement. And then, so it gave the whole, I thought, it gave the whole of the first film this slightly manic feel that made Brenda seem quite manic and jumpy and quite mad, quite batty, like a batty old woman. And the second one was much clearer and calmer, as was the, in fact, all the others were.
I think there are great things about the first film. In fact, I think when the actors were sitting still, it tended to be better. And I think that Vera and Joe in the first one, when they're together, I thought all those scenes, you immediately could see how that relationship felt, like it could really convey something to an audience. You know.
I think Vera is a bit more open in the films than in the books, because, for example, her father, Hector, is a big presence in the books, even though he's dead, but in her thoughts and her memories. And I think in the series, because you can't see inside her head, she speaks more to Joe about her father, about how she's feeling, so she's a slightly more open character.
That's interesting, isn't it? I think you're probably right. I think there's it probably changes the relationship between Vera and Joe, in that there is a more, not a confessional thing, but he becomes the confidant, that he isn't quite in the books. There's that great line at the end of Hidden Depths about, you know, I can't quote it, but God, he could be so boring at times, you know. There's a very slightly, I wouldn't say buffoonish, it's too strong a word, but a very slightly buffoonish streak to Joe, isn't there? In his, I think through Vera's perspective.
Yeah, he goes home to his family and Vera wonders what that might be like and then thinks it's probably the most boring existence in the world to be Joe Ashburn. Mm. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's sort of a mother-son relationship. How would you describe it?
Yeah, he's the son that she maybe wishes that she'd had and knows that she'll never have a chance to have now. So there is that slight regret because although she's never been married and never had a relationship, I think she does feel that she's missed out and quite regrets that a bit.
Mm.
Yeah. So he provides that role in her life.
And one of the books, he pretends that she's his aunt and tells her, this is my mad old aunt, I brought with me. So, I mean, the first film is fairly faithful to start with to the novel, although I think there's one extra murder in the film.
Yes,
is there
that's
a quota
true, yes.
of murders you have to get in for an ITV prime time?
Yeah, I think so.
It's very interesting, this whole thing about the number of murders. I often think it's like diminishing returns. You know, it's like, the first pint is great, the second pint less, because the third pint is getting a little bit watery and bitter. And I think, sometimes we need to be, just hold back on the murders a little bit in screen adaptations. I don't think there is a quota, but people never object when you throw another murder in.
Do you have much interference, I suppose you'd call it, from producers or anything?
I have quite a lot, but I would also have to add that it's the kind of interference that seems to make the script better. I'm very lucky on this particular project that I have people who I know and trust and admire, and their input is invariably very constructive. And when it's not, I let them know that too, and they're fine about it.
So we talk about Brenda Blethyn just briefly. She's brilliant in it. She's not quite your Vera, though, is she? She's slightly older, and
yeah.
She's obviously not big. I mean, in the books, one character says she thinks Vera could do with a crane to help her out of the chair. Vera is a big woman. So, Brenda, do you think of her as your Vera?
I don't. When I picture Vera in my head, I don't see Brenda. But when I write dialogue, I hear Brenda speak the words, which is odd, isn't it? Because she's not a Geordie. She's from Kent, and sometimes the accent stumbles a little bit. But she I got invited to the read-through, which is obviously when the cast all get together, perhaps for the only time, to sit round a table in the production office and just read the script all the way through once. And at that point, they're not acting, it's just sort of timing and seeing how it works. And just at that read-through, I knew that would be okay, that Brenda would be all right for Vera. And it's just something about the way she inhabits the character, I think, that makes it work. So it doesn't really matter that she's not enormous. It matters that she's a good actor, and she is.
Mm.
Did you have anyone else in mind?
No, I didn't. And they did tell me that they were going to approach Brenda, and I was absolutely delighted. And it was almost like, well, if we get Brenda, the series will be made, and if we don't, it might be a bit tricky, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
And I remember phoning up Paul, and I was quite drunk that night when we heard that Brenda had said yes.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, I can hear a sort of tabletop crashing somewhere in the background.
My husband's
all
singing.
Well.
I think we'd been in the pub. Yeah.
Is there, when you were watching the series, was there anything you learned about Vera or thought, yes, this is not what I wrote, but this is what Vera would do in this situation?
Well, that's an interesting interesting thought, isn't it? See, I watch it as a viewer. I'm not really thinking this is an adaptation of a book that I wrote. I'm more thinking, have they been true to Paul's script, rather than is this right for the book? Because that's what it is. It's just a different beast. It's not really my book anymore. So I don't really think of it in those terms.
I think Brenda Blethyn herself said when she read the book, she thought Vera would be a good person to have a drink with, which I think is something characters often say in the books. But I think readers feel the same way, but she's not always kind or sympathetic.
She's not. She's a strong woman. And again, I think if she were a male detective like DL, people wouldn't have any sort of, there wouldn't be any fuss about that. But it's because she's a woman somehow that she ought not to do those things. And people say, she drinks. Well, yes, but women do drink. So that's all right, I think.
has a comic aspect, but you're always very careful to make her dignified.
I hope so, yeah. So I think Renda does too. She's never absolutely ridiculous, is she? She's never ridiculous in the film. She still maintains that dignity and that compassion, I think, for the people that she's working with. I'm just thinking about the crow trap and that quite a nice conversation with the actress Elizabeth Carling, and I thought that worked very well. This is a mother who was, whose son was abducted years and years before, and the woman doesn't know whether he's dead or whether he's alive, and Vera had headed up that original investigation and perhaps messed up because she spent too long concentrating on the fact that the parents might have been involved in the child's disappearance. And just a very interesting conversation. That was an example of just very static, two people sat across an interview table, but still managing to get the drama there and the sympathy of the viewer.
Mm.
So, and your first series of novels, which you began in the 80s, was about an amateur detective who was the wife of an ornithologist.
Yeah.
And you are the wife of an ornithologist. Yeah, birds and bird watchers, the recurring feature in your books, aren't they? There's something about the natural world and birds carrying on flying overhead, ignoring us while we get on with murdering each other on the ground.
Yeah, I think it's probably a more subliminal desire to murder bird watchers, really. Spence had such an impact on our lives. Yeah.
You're not including your husband in that.
No,
just
no,
the ones.
Yeah.
Are you conscious of this bird motif? The thing with the TV films is you
yes.
can see the birds.
Yes, funnily enough, in the Hidden Depth script in particular, I wrote it in a lot more than was realised
yes.
in the end, which was.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's a part of her, and in a way, it's a part of her relationship with her dad as well. That she both begrudged him and found him a difficult and overbearing and unsympathetic man. But also, I think I suspect she a bit of it. It's rubbed off on her. If only osmosis. She knows a lot more than she cares to know.
I find myself being able to identify bird calls and then thinking, no, pull yourself together and you don't really need to know
this.
Just living with a bird
yes.
for such a long time.
Yeah.
Can't understand why this is taking up space in your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in one of the books, Vera expresses contempt for, I'll quote here, those psychological thrillers where part of the action is seen from the murderer's point of view, written in a different font or the present tense. She borrowed books like that from the library sometimes and enjoyed throwing them across the room when they got the details of police procedure wrong. And you're not one for the ingenious serial killer, are you? You think it's important to write about ordinary people? Sort of?
Yeah, I do. And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be serial killers and great lumps written in italics, but it's just not for me.
That's Vera's view, not your view.
No, absolutely not my view at all. But I don't write that sort of book either.
No, but you write about, I think, people who commit crimes that any of us might commit in the right.
I think so, just because I'm more interested in writing that sort of book, yeah. It was interesting listening to the panel that Martin moderated earlier about the question, are we all capable of murder? And I suppose I was looking at, I enjoy looking at the pressures that might drive ordinary people to commit murder. And that's what interests me.
So, Paul, you've written an original episode, which is going to be broadcast on Sunday night. It's called Little Lazarus.
Mm.
And so did you feel a special responsibility then to be faithful to Anne's character, Vera?
Yes, is the short answer, of course. No, it was interesting, partly because I think if the show is to go on and succeed, there will be more original stories. But also it was lucky to have, the timing of it, to have done the pilot the year before. So there's a chance to see Brenda's performance. And I hope that the story that plays tomorrow night, on Sunday night, is a dialogue with the characters in Anne's books. And I mean, you know, it, in a very simple way, it struck me as interesting that here is this woman who has no kids and has never married and all the rest of it. And it's not a problem for her particularly. There's no self-pity there, but she doesn't find children particularly comfortable to be around. So I thought, well, let's do a story about her and a child. You know, let's put those two things together. So in that way, it's very much, I hope, something that is in the stream of the character and what she might do. You know, it's a bit more urban, isn't it, than the other ones? But I think in terms of the pattern of the series, that felt quite nice. nice too, just to come back into Tyneside a bit more.
Yeah, and there seems to be an arc to the series, Vera's relationship with Joe's children, or children in general.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which isn't perhaps so present in the book as an arc.
And I must say I was really cross because I had the DVD of Little Lazarus and showed it to my daughters and they thought it was fantastic. I did think it might be slightly more tactful to say, well, you know, it was okay, but it wasn't as good as yours.
Okay, well, Vera is just one string to your bow, of course. And Raven Black, which is the first volume in your Shetland Quartet, the Jimmy Perez series, that was adapted for radio recently, wasn't it? And would you like to see it on TV?
Yeah, I mean, the same team have optioned the Shetland books, so that would be nice, but that's a very long way down the line. And White Nights, the second of the Shetland Quartet, is on Radio 4 on July the 2nd, I think. The first Saturday in July, anyway, as an afternoon play. And I thought that they made a fantastic job of the first one, of Raven Black, so I'm looking forward to that. I haven't heard
that. Who's Jimmy Perez?
Can't remember an actor, I don't know.
I mean, it would be visually very striking because in the four books are each set in a different season on the show, so you would have four very contrasting films.
You would, yeah. I think it would be tremendous, but we'll wait and see.
And can I ask about Vera returning to TV?
Yes. She is going to return.
Yes, she'll be back next year, we hope.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you'll be involved?
Yes.
Are you pleased with the reaction the series has got?
It's quite terrifying actually having these things come out. I try not to look at the reviews too much, but yes, I am. I think people responded really well to Brenda's performance, and I like to think that people are warming to her and understanding her more and more week on week. I think it's interesting because together there's a lot of seems to be a lot of people sort of saying, well, okay, so is she Marple or is she Helen Mirren? Which one is she? Is she Taylor? And you're like, well. Maybe she's Vera, and that's just something different. I think people are starting to discover this. Something interesting I would posit, put out there, I might be wrong, is that I think people are a little bit more judgmental about a female cop than they would be about a male cop, about the behaviour of a middle-aged woman who is both compassionate, brilliant, and occasionally tyrannical and unpredictable, which I think are characteristics that in a male detective would be welcomed, and I think in general I hope people are with Vera. It's interesting, sometimes I think perhaps people are a little bit more judgmental about her because she's a woman.
You think they think she should be more of a role model?
Yes.
Where men can get away with doing what they.
Yes. Like. I wonder. I mean, it's a question, actually, as much as anything. You know.
And you're working on a fifth Vera novel.
The fifth Vera one is finished and it's called The Glass Room, and I had great fun with it, and I think that I'm hoping that Paul will do the adaptation maybe sometime, but it's about a sort of Arvon course, so a course for want-to-be writers in a big Gothic house on the Northumberland coast, so playing with that idea of the enclosed mystery, and so that was fun. You could imagine Vera with a load of pompous poets, pretentious poets and writers. I did have, and academics. I had great fun writing that.
Well, I'll just ask if there are any questions from the audience. Yes.
Do you have plans to make the Shetland Quartet a series?
Oh, do you want to repeat that?
Yes. The question was if you want to make the Shetland Quartet, do you want to carry on with it, presumably?
Yes. I was in Shetland just a couple of days ago, and I've just spent 10 days in Shetland looking at researching a new Shetland book. So I'm about 30,000 words into it. And again, it's nice after being with Vera for a while to go back and being with the folk up in Shetland and getting some ideas for plot lines and characters.
Without giving anything away, there was quite a conclusive.
Yeah.
Well, the definite conclusion to the end of the last volume.
Yes, and I needed to do that because I'd said it was a quartet, so I couldn't just let everything sort of carry on as before. So I needed a dramatic ending to mark the end of the quartet. and also a way of bringing back my central character to be different and slightly harder, perhaps, and just exploring other issues with him. Because again, Shetland is a mixture of the industrial and the rural, because we all know that a lot of the UK's oil comes ashore at Sullivo in Shetland, and now there's a huge new gas plant being built there by Total, and it's like boom town all over again. It's like a gold rush again. So suddenly the Shetlanders are making huge amounts of money by letting out their trucks to carry construction, and there isn't a room to be had in Shetland because all the contractors are being put up in croft houses. And so that's quite, I mean, it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
I'm quite interested in looking at that. About, I suppose Red Bones is about wealth and greed a bit, but looking at that idea about it's the industrial base of Shetland too.
So a lot of Irish writers are writing, you know, the economy is going up and down like a yo-yo.
Yeah.
So same sort of thing.
Yeah, it is a bit.
Interesting times to write about.
Yeah, it is.
And have you any ideas for another series you might do?
No, I'm quite happy at the minute with Vera and the Shetland group, yeah.
Yes, Sam. The question was, would you return to Inspector Ramsay, who was your second detective?
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I think he, in a way, Vera superseded him, because he's a bit like Jimmy Perez as well, isn't he? That quiet, understated man with a conscience, which is, I suppose, what lots of fictional cops are, but. I'm not sure if I would ever go back to him, because I think the Vera books cover the same territory, really. I mean, the same geography as well as anything else. So I probably wouldn't go back to him. But I did enjoy writing those too. We moved to the Northeast in 1986, and suddenly it felt like a very good home to be able to write very traditional crime fiction, because I write about small enclosed communities where everybody knows each other's business, and I think it's quite hard to do that in villages in the south anymore, because villages in the south, you have lots of people from outside living there, and mostly wealthy people who've bought up the homes or second homeowners. I come from North Devon, and that's a bit the case. There are lots of people from outside. Whereas in the expat villages, especially of Northumberland, people do absolutely still know each other's business. So it's, you can do the more Christie, the more golden age things in those communities.
And we'll ask you, Paul, if you have any other interesting projects on the go.
Yes, trying to think what they are. I'm actually writing a show for another show for ITV at the moment. It's in development. We'll see what happens, which is for the what they call the Doctor Who slot, so it's for the 7 o'clock Saturday thing. But I'm not allowed to say what it's about, so that's not very interesting.
Any more questions? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I found it interesting when you were analysing the three shows of Vera that have been on so far. It's only a personal view that on the first two, I didn't belong to Brenda to Vera.
Yeah.
Vera not a character that it's easy to warm to.
Yeah, I think, again, and I think it must be hard for the actors to get into their stride, because the first film was done as a pilot. So just came up, did one film, then Brendan went off and did feature films and did other things, and then came back, they all came back as a team to Tyneside to film the next three. So again, the first one that they did of those three, Telling Tales, would have been coming to it cold again after quite a long time, and I think it does take time for the actors to sort of, I don't know, the relationship especially between Joe and her, which is where you see where she becomes more sympathetic. And I especially loved the scene, which wasn't in the book, with her looking after the kids in her Land Rover, and the kids calling her Mussolini, and she's blowing up the
balloon,
the glove as a balloon, and just not sure what to do there, and just lovely bit, and another bit where can't remember which one it was in, when Joe finds that he has nothing inside his sandwich, and and before he can look to her, she snaffles the rest of her packed lunch in one mouthful, so that there's no way that he can ask her for any of hers. Just little things like that, which I think is great script writing, and is nothing at all to do with me.
I suppose, Paul, you would want people to, because Vera is not an easy character, you would want people to get used to her gradually and become fonder of her as the series, as long as they didn't switch off after one.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I'm glad that you stuck with it. Thank you for that. But no, I think that's true. I wonder if it's I think humour is important. It may be that sometimes a detective needs to have almost the right witness or suspect, someone to bring something out in her, and those are the heart of a detective drama. Those two-handers where you really pick apart motives and secrets, and the way in which she does that in that particular scene you're talking about does show a lot of compassion. Maybe that was the thing that you felt was missing in the first two.
And there's the best one-liner in the whole series in episode 4, so do watch out.
I suppose it's difficult for us to remember now whether we liked Morse or Frost when we first saw them. Mm. It took us a while to get used to them.
I'm trying to remember. I think did Frost not begin with with his wife's death in the very first episode? Yes, and I think that was probably quite an effective way of drawing us in. You know, I suppose I hope that Vera's kind of grief for her father, complicated grief for her father, is would do something of that job in the first story. I don't know how much that impacted, but you know, that's the hope.
Okay. Any more questions? Yes, madam.
Yeah, that's quite scary.
Yes, the question is sort of, you'll be writing about Vera in parallel with the series taking off, and wondering how that will affect you.
We did have a dinner up in Northumberland a little while ago with the two new script writers, and obviously I talk a lot to Paul. So it is quite interesting because he's got these plans for Vera, and I'm thinking, am I going to just ignore what he's doing and do my own thing, or am I somehow going to acknowledge what's happening in the show and carry on writing? And I haven't really come to terms with that yet, but it's good that I think that I developed this relationship with Elaine, who's the producer, so at least I'm told what's going to happen in the next four episodes. I do have a sort of outline of the stories and what they're planning, and also I think it is again very gracious and very generous to include me in that, because I think my experience of being adapted is immensely better than most people's, just because I've been I sit in and I get a sense of what's happening, and we have got a sort of tradition now, a writer's curry in our house. My husband cooks an enormous curry, and the writers
takes
come.
2 days.
But other writers come, and we sit and we chat, and just that idea of sharing storylines and plot lines makes it a lot easier. And I now have to go and have a chat with my editor, my publishers, and just sort of plan out a little bit a storyline that will take into account what the script writers want to do as well.
Is there anything that you would say, no, Vera will not do that? Getting married, perhaps, but anything else?
I'm not sure. Things would be up for negotiation, because we have this discussion, these ongoing discussions. So it's not as if anything comes as a real surprise. Again, not like Reg Hill, where the television people send Ellie off to the States, and his answer to that was to write a book called Arms and the Woman, wasn't it? To totally featuring Ellie.
Yeah.
So to, hey, you know, this is nothing to do with me.
And Ellie out, he called it.
Yeah.
Okay, any more questions? Yes, madam.
Does Binder Betting add something to the role of Bin that neither do you see either?
Yes, I think so. And I can't put my finger on it, but it is maybe that slightly manic quality that I never saw Vera as having. You know, she's very active, and that's why I think it's great to have Joe, played by David Leon, who, despite looking absolutely lovely, is a very good actor too. And he has that stillness and that glue that I think holds the episodes, all the episodes together. So, yeah.
I think it's absolutely true that actors do. They take the characters on, and then their voices get in your heads, and so you start writing them differently. I think there are certain things she does particularly well. There's a scene in Hidden Depths where she's interviewing this teenage girl, who and they're sitting on a park bench, and the girl admits that she slept with this boy when she was young, and her mum doesn't know. And Vera says, "Don't worry, your secret's safe with me, but I really need to know where that camera is." And she exploits her in a way, because she can be warm and she is compassionate, but she also has this hunger for the truth. And I think seeing the way that Brenda loved those moments and attacks those moments was very interesting. And I think that has changed, that informed stories going forward, that she likes that friction, so that it's not simply compassion. She's not just a warm, sympathetic
mother. Because the mother
type.
Sees them at that moment, doesn't she?
She does, yeah. But that she is willing to exploit witnesses and suspects in order to get the truth, you know.
Yes, sir.
Do you think we're down to crime fiction seem better now than we used to do, or do you think it was?
Do we think we adapt crime fiction for TV better now than we asked you, Paul?
I think it varies, is the diplomatic answer. I think two-hour dramas are very hard to do because they're a very different experience from reading the book. I think if I'm quite a slow reader. I read at 30 pages an hour, or 40 if I'm really excited. I'm not the sort of person who can read a book in 2 hours. Perhaps many of you are, but I never was. So for me, reading a book was always something you do in, say, 4 or 5 installments, whereas if you watch something in 2 hours, it's just one hit. And I think the ending becomes terribly important, because if the ending of the story doesn't work, then I think it falls apart. I would say 2 hours, I think it is hard. I think we've always done it well. I think Morse set the bench. Wallard is great. I also love the fact that the killing has been has had an impact on everyone. The idea of a 20-part or even 5-part or 10-part